Welcome to Move Wild Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Clapson. The aim of this podcast is to explore, learn, and spread the message of rewilding and natural movement so that we as humans can live in more alignment with our nature and reclaim what it means to be fully alive. The modern world has stripped away so much that used to nourish our mind, body, and soul. This podcast will help illuminate how we can reclaim and restore our innate, wild, capable, and strong spirit. Thanks for joining me on this journey. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Move Wild Podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. So today I have the pleasure of sharing a conversation I recorded with Tom Brown III. Tom, also known as T3, has been a lifelong student and practitioner of primitive living skills, wilderness survival, and nature connection. Born in New Jersey in 1978, he grew up learning the skills our ancestors used to live close to the earth from his father, Tom Brown Jr., founder of the Tracker Wilderness Survival School. Growing up at the Tracker School showed him the profound effect reconnecting people to nature can have not only on the individual, but on the planet as a whole. After spending a few years wandering across America, he has spent the last 20 years teaching the skills he learned as a child. Currently, Tom lives in Oregon and works with Trackers Earth as the Director of Adult Programming. He is also the Foraging Homesteading Coordinator for Anchored Outdoors, which is a new website dedicated to hunting, fishing, foraging, and homesteading. When not teaching or writing, Tom is an avid fly fisherman, traditional archer, and nature photographer. You can find more of Tom's work at anchoredoutdoors.com, trackersearth.com, and on Instagram, tom_brown3. This was a phenomenal conversation. I really, really enjoyed it, really resonated with many of the points that Tom shared. So let's get into it. Looking forward to seeing what you guys think. And catch me on the other side of this episode for how you can connect with Tom and myself.
So that is recording. So Tom, welcome to Move Our Podcast. Thank you for joining me on the show today.
No problem. Happy to do it, brother.
Absolutely. So to start with, I'd like to kind of get a little bit of your backstory and what is the path that has led you into doing the work that you do today. And if you could also kind of describe what it is exactly that you do today.
Excellent. So yeah, we'll start with what I do today. So, I do a lot of things, but my primary roles right now are I am the Director of Adult Programming at Trackers Earth, which is an outdoor school, outdoor organization based in Portland, Oregon. But we have locations in the San Francisco Bay Area, as well as Denver and Seattle. So basically what I do is I'm in charge of setting up and scheduling adult classes based around, nature connection, primitive living skills, wilderness survival, homesteading and foraging, and stuff like that. When I'm not doing that stuff, I am the foraging and homestead coordinator for Anchored Outdoors, which is a newish website started by April Vokey. That is, the website is basically built for people who are either just wanting to get into hunting, fishing, foraging, and homesteading as a means to be more self-sufficient, but in a very conscious and ethical way. You know, a lot of kind of hunting and fishing websites are very, their approach isn't so well. And, I've been hounded by television producers and media companies for the last 15 years to do any number of TV shows, and those sort of things. And I always turn them down because I can't stand the way that a lot of these networks want to portray humans and their connection with nature. They often, want to showcase humans and nature in an adversarial relationship, when in my experience, that is not the way you exist in the natural world. You need to be, working in concert with nature and surrendering to nature as opposed to it being your enemy. And until I met April, who started Anchored Outdoors, I really had no desire to kind of dip my toe into the media world. And that changed when I met her. So yeah, that's my other job as well. So I basically write articles and produce content for that website. And then I also am responsible for, you know, gathering other like-minded people to produce content as well. So yeah, so that's been fun as well. I've been doing that for the last few months.
Awesome.
Kind of how I arrived at this station in life. So my father, Tom Brown Jr., is kind of the guy who is responsible for starting the modern day interest in primitive living skills and wilderness survival. He's written, I think his 19th book was just published this fall, and his 20th is on the way. He started his school in early 1978, so the year I was born. So he's still teaching to this day. So he's been doing it for 41 years. So, you know, like say I was born into it. So from an early age, I was, you know, raised with a deep reverence, respect, and, you know, thankfulness for the natural world. And not only that, but the skills that all of our ancestors used, you know, back in the hunter-gatherer days to live close to the earth. And for, you know, the last 20 years or so, I've been teaching, you know, quote-unquote professionally. And my goal, just like my father's, is to try and lead as many people as possible back to the natural world, to plug them back in, because I think there's a, you know, one of the main reasons why there's just so many ills in our society, I truly believe stems from them being cut off from the natural world. And I've seen it time and time again throughout my career. Just, you know, people come to a class for the first time and they're, you know, kind of lost souls, and you show them this amazing set of skills and you introduce them to plants and trees that they've been around their whole life but didn't realize how many things they could make from them or foods they could gather from them. And all of a sudden this, you know, there's this sparkle back in their eyes and it completely changes their lives. And I'm actually also, side thing, I'm actually also in the process of writing a book about, kind of helping to heal from mental illness and addiction through nature connection. So I was born into it. I did spend a few years in my late teens, early 20s in my rebellious phase where I didn't think this is what I wanted to do, and that brought me nothing but misery. It led me to my own struggles with drug addiction. And it wasn't until I, a good friend of mine helped me out and got me well and helped me to recapture my roots, so to speak, and get back into the primitive skills and into the nature connection movement. That's kind of where I've been ever since.
Yeah, that's a cool story, and I love you sharing that, and I really appreciate that. You mentioned that many. A lot of media portrays humans and nature as separate, and it's almost an adversarial relationship. Yeah. I think you said, how do we kind of retell that story and get people feeling more connected to nature? What are some of the ways that you're doing it, like on a practical level? And why do you think it's important that on a broader level, why do you think it's important that humans feel connected to and a part of nature?
Well, you know, back to the whole TV show thing, it seems like the last 10 or 15 years, especially, there's been this explosion of these, reality TV shows. And it all kind of started with Les Stroud and Survivor Man. And he's actually one person I really appreciate because he actually filmed his real experiences out in the woods. And then, production companies kind of picked up and rolled with it. And, there was the whole Bear Grylls thing, the man versus wild. And, now we have Naked and Afraid and all of these shows. And, not only do they, as I said, to showcase humans and nature in an adversarial relationship, but a lot of these shows, especially ones that feature, multiple people, they also are using nature and, you know, wilderness survival skills as another medium to showcase human drama. And you know, that I'm totally against that. And, you know, I've had a lot of friends who have worked on various television show projects, and, you know, what was filmed as opposed to what was shown on TV were completely different experiences. And it's, you know, they call it reality TV when nothing could be further from the truth. It's very, very scripted. But anyway, back to what I'm doing to connect people. You know, as I said, it's all about education. You know, if you, you know, for instance, I have a friend who has a PhD in Indigenous studies, and he's been all over the world, you know, spending time and living with, you know, groups of people who still live, you know, a hunter-gatherer based lifestyle, or still live, you know, what Westerners would consider be a primitive life. And one thing that he really found astounding about it is when you go to these groups, you know, every single person from the kid that's just old enough to walk and talk to the oldest elder in the village, you know, they know the names of every plant and every tree and its edible uses and its medicinal uses. And they know the names of the animals and the animals, you know, habits and habitats and what the animals are eating, and they're intimately connected with the land around them. Now, you know, contrast to the average, you know, person that lives in the Western world, you know, this world of convenience and ease and safety and security and comfort that we all surround ourselves with, you know, most Westerners are incredibly cut off from the natural world. And I think that when we lose our connection to the natural world, it makes the destruction of the natural world that much more palatable to the average person, because they don't have that deep connection with the land around them. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, in order to, you know, maintain the systems that keep us all going, you know, nature pays the price, you know, for our convenience, you know, for the cheap disposable goods that everybody buys, and, you know, food that's shipped in from around the world and, you know, grown in really poor conditions with a lot of chemicals, and animals that are grown, you know, hundreds of them in a very small space and fed horrible diets. And, you know, it's one thing I've noticed is, you know, when you reconnect people to nature and they really start to think about the choices that they make in their daily lives, either, you know, what products they buy or, you know, how they choose to live their lives. And, you know, all of a sudden you have a person who has, you know, gone their whole life relying on these systems, not even thinking about it, to all of a sudden, you know, equating that, oh, well, you know, that coconut oil that I use to make meals with, they literally cut down hundreds of thousands of, or, you know, of acres of rainforest to grow the palm trees to make that. And then they, you know, make some different choices. So yeah, so that's, as I said, and that ties into, you know, both my father's mission and my mission and the mission of Trackers Earth as well, is just to reconnect people, to raise their awareness. And when you do that, they become, you know, much happier, well-rounded human beings. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I love that. And I definitely have seen that myself in immersing myself in the world of rewilding and nature connection, and seeing that I definitely become more whole when I reconnect to nature, because that's, you know, that's where humans come from. That's exactly that's what's native to us. And when we remove ourselves from it, and when we separate ourselves from it, that's when we experience illness and sickness. And it's, as you said, it's a lot more palatable to disconnect and also destroy the natural world in many ways when we're in a place of separation rather than connection. Why do you think that humans have become so separate from nature, and how, you know, what on a large kind of societal scale, how would you go about kind of undoing that separation?
You know, that is the question for the ages. You know, I think it all really started, you know, with the advent of agriculture, honestly, when we stopped, you know, moving around and following the seasons and following the migrations and started to kind of settle in areas and, you know, produce our own foods. You know, that's where it really started. And it's just been a, you know, kind of a slow downward spiral ever since. I mean, if you look at the you know, the whole history of the earth, or, you know, let's even shorten it a little bit, the history of, you know, Homo sapiens and our earlier iterations, you know, we are, you know, we're designed, our brains right now, our brains are designed to live in small groups of no more than 100 or 150 people. And, you know, as our populations have exploded, you know, there's things needed to maintain that population growth. You know, we can cram ourselves into cities. You know, they've, you know, come up with all sorts of new ways to grow more food and produce more. And I think a lot of that is born of the fact of just that there's that we've, you know, quote unquote, developed so rapidly, that, you know, our minds are still wired to essentially be hunter gatherers. And, you know, as far as a solution, you know, as I said, that's one for the ages. You know, my father likes to say, you know, to his classes, and this is something I say to mine as well, you know, if you try to, you know, think of it on a grand scale of, you know, reconnecting people to nature and healing the earth, it seems like an impossible feat. And the way we approach it is, you know, we imagine, you know, kind of the critical mass theory, where, you know, all we have to do is reach one more person, you know, connect one more person back to the natural world. And that one person is going to cause the mass consciousness to flip. And, you know, we'll start making better choices, you know, with how we live and what we consume. And, you know, I'm forever an optimist. I still think there is time, but, yeah, you know, the biggest one I think is just the size of the human population and how much that's exploded. And even though there are still, you know, there's still lots of uninhabited land out there, really, we're the only animal that is able to exempt itself from natural law, you know, through things like our modern medicine, you know, whereas if you look at some, let's take rabbits, for example, you know, and I know over in Australia, you guys have some issues with rabbits.
Yeah.
But, you know, here in the States, let's say, you know, the rabbit population just booms one year. Well, eventually, that rabbit species will overreach the carrying capacity of the land, meaning, you know, that the space they're occupying can no longer support them. And that's when Mother Nature, you know, for better or worse, will, a disease will pop up that will cut the population down to a more manageable level. And, you know, we as humans, we've been able to exempt ourselves from that, you know, through things like modern medicine, et cetera. And, you know, I think that we're only going to be able to maintain that for so long. And, you know, I think, you know, ever since the whole, you know, the COVID coronavirus, whatever you want to call it, popped up, I've gotten calls from tons of, you know, friends and old students and, you know, is this it? Is this like the end of humanity? And I said, no, but this is, you know, this is the warning shot fired against the bow of our ship, that, you know, we need to make some changes. But, you know, as I said, you know, what that looks like, how we implement that, there's no really good answer out there, because there's just so many of us. So as I said, I take it one day at a time, one class at a time, one interview at a time. and just try to change hearts and minds and affect people in any way I can, and hoping that, you know, that one person, you know, it's going to cause that critical mass to flip, and, you know, we'll make better choices. And I think we have seen, you know, over, you know, the last 10 or 15 years, you know, the whole, you know, green lifestyle and organic foods and things like that, is that people are starting to wake up. Whether or not it's too late, you know, remains to be seen.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that idea of looking at it on that scale of just thinking, you know, one person at a time, whose life can I change right now? And if I can change that life, then that'll have a knock-on effect and a ripple effect, rather than getting overwhelmed by looking at just this mass of people that are unaware of many of these things that we're talking about.
Exactly. And it's, you know, it's, and this is another thing I've seen countless times in my career, you know, you plug that one person back in and they get super excited and they go home and they, you know, get a few of their friends together and they say, hey, you know, come check out this cool stuff I learned in this class. And, you know, the next thing you know, there's four more people. And then, as I said, that ripple effect happens. And, you know, at least in the, you know, the kind of, you know, primitive living skills, you know, wilderness survival, you know, just general skills of, you know, being more self-sufficient, there definitely has been an explosion of that in the last decade or so. Which is also really, really awesome.
Yeah, it's good to see. Really, really good to see. Can you give some examples of some of the stuff that you offer at Trackers Earth and what you define as primitive living skills?
Sure. Yeah, and you know, it's funny right now, you know, we're, you know, here in the States, you know, I'm sure, you know, it's had worldwide ripple effects, but, you know, not only the whole pandemic, but all of these issues that are going on, you know, with the police and, you know, them, you know, killing people for essentially no reason. People often associate the word primitive with, you know, simple or not even simple. It can have a negative connotation. So the types of things I teach are, you know, I think a better term for them will be ancestral skills.
Yeah.
And, you know, no matter where you're from on the planet, no matter what the color of your skin, if you trace your ancestors, your lineage far enough back, you know, you will arrive at peoples that, you know, used friction fire to light fires and, you know, broke rocks to make sharp tools out of, and, you know, tanned animal hides and built shelters and made baskets and all of those things. So, you know, a lot of what I teach are a lot of those skills. And, you know, one thing that I've found incredibly interesting in my career of doing this is, you know, these skills are universal, you know. And it's also interesting to know that, you know, for the time being, I'll call them, you know, primitive technologies. A lot of these technologies, things like friction fire and, you know, flint knapping, you know, were started in different parts of the, you know, human world right around the same time. And, you know, often thousands, you know, of miles apart from each other. So I find it incredibly interesting that these skills were all, you know, were being used by different groups of people that had never had any contact with each other, but they were all, you know, kind of doing them in one form or another. So, you know, what I do here and, you know, what I've been doing for the last 20 years is, you know, teaching some of those skills, you know, whether it be fire by friction or, you know, shelter building or, you know, and, you know, making bows or making arrowheads or tanning hides, and just kind of, you know, humans are tool makers, you know, and that's one thing that has allowed us, that has separated us from a lot of the other animal kingdom, is we have the ability to make and use a wide variety of tools. And, you know, for better or worse, that's what's, you know, allowed us to spread far and wide. And, you know, there's, you know, especially when it comes to, you know, quote unquote primitive skills, or making any tool, the thing that I really love about it, and, you know, what is a huge draw for a lot of people, is, you know, let's say I need a random tool and I'm a modern human, right? I go to the hardware store, you know, I go to the outdoor store and I buy a tool. Now, this tool I buy at the store is not unique, right? There's probably a million others like it that were produced on the same assembly line. But when I make a tool, you know, out of natural materials that I gather off the landscape, you know, I am making what is essentially a one-of-a-kind piece of functional art that is unique to me. You know, a common fire making technique I teach is the bow drill. And I've, you know, probably conservatively taught 10,000 people in my life to, you know, how to make a bow drill kit and how to make a bow drill fire. Well, if, you know, I teach 10 people how to build and make a bow drill kit, you know, sure, the bow drill kits, you know, on a surface glance, they look similar, but they're not, because they are individual to the maker. It's not some sterile piece of equipment that came off an assembly line, one right after the other. And to me, that's where the magic lies in these skills, is that, you know, everything that I make, you know, even though I'm following a certain set of principles, and I'll talk about principles here in a minute, even though I'm following a certain set of principles, it's a one-of-a-kind piece of functional art that I made, that is going to help me to fulfill a need. And, you know, to me, that's where a lot of the magic is. You know, and I talked about principles. Excuse me, I take a drink of water here. When I teach, the way I teach and the way I approach teaching these skills is I teach the principles of how something works. You know, I teach the principles of how friction fire works. And then, you know, the person can take those principles and apply them to whatever environment they live in. You know, like, so let's say I'm teaching somebody how to make rope or cordage, you know, I teach people how to, you know, get cordage fibers from the inner barks of trees, or, you know, from certain woody stock plants. And then they can, you know, wherever they live in the world, they can take those principles, they understand the principles of how the skill works, and then they can apply it to the natural materials that are available around them. And very quickly, they will figure out if, you know, is this material good for a bow drill kit, or is this woody stock plant good for making cordage? And yeah, it's really, really awesome. And the other thing I, you know, love about, you know, these skills is, you know, we live in this crazy modern age with all this technology, and every year, you know, you get a new iPhone, and every year there's a new model car or a new model computer. Whereas the skills that I teach, you know, have been at the height of their technology for tens, if not hundreds of thousands of years. You know, you know, lack of a better word, invented and perfected by our ancestors. And the skills I teach, you know, they can't be improved upon the way a lot of the modern junk that we use is always improved upon. And there's some magic in that as well, because the lineage behind it, you know, it's amazing to make something and to think back, you know, 60,000 years ago, somebody was making this same thing and making it in the same way, and it works just as good now as it did then. And I really can't improve upon it. So that's where a lot of the magic lies in the skills with me.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I really love that idea of, giving people a set of principles to work with and then having them go out and actually apply them to different landscapes, because it fosters a state of creativity and adaptability rather than force, you know, rather than feeding someone, you know, this is the exact way to use the technology or this is the exact way to make something. It gives people that room to kind of create and adapt and have a bit of trial and error in there, as well as working off of those principles. And it feels a lot more natural for people to have that. And I also really like that idea of the fact that each, you know, each tool that people make, it might be, you know, the same thing, like a bow drill kit or a hand drill kit or whatever it is, but for each individual it's slightly different just because it's individually made rather than off an assembly line. And I've never really thought about it that way, but I really like that.
And in another thing I do is, you know, I also believe that our kind of, you know, Western education system is incredibly flawed. You know, in order to make it through, you know, elementary school and then high school and then university, you know, and then go on to advanced degree to be a doctor, you know, you don't necessarily have to be smart, but if you're good at memorizing things and regurgitating it, you're going to get through just fine. So, you know, what I tell my students on the first day of class is, and this is the same, I got this one from my father, if you believe everything I'm telling you is true, you're a fool. Your job is not to believe me. Your job is to prove me right or prove me wrong. And, you know, I want my participants to be active learners. So I will often design lessons to fail, or I'll teach a skill and I'll purposely leave something out so that they're forced to learn in a different way. Now, my father's teacher, Stalking Wolf, you know, called it coyote teaching, whereas, you know, if you're in a Western school and you have a question, you know, you raise your hand, the teacher calls on you, you say, you know, here's my question. And the teacher says, oh, here's the answer. Or, you know, turn to page 125 in your textbook. You know, if you ask a coyote teacher a question, they are either going to point you in the direction of the answer, or they're going to ask you another question. So it really forces people to use their brains in a different way than we're taught to, you know, in our modern schooling system. And, you know, our most modern schools don't really prepare people, you know, for life and to be critical thinkers and to question everything and to always be a student. And that's another thing I try to get across, you know, with the folks that come to me for classes, you know, is to always be asking, you know, what we call the sacred question, you know, what happened here? What is this teaching me? Whether it's an animal track or, you know, anything. And so I try to encourage people to learn how to learn differently and, you know, always approach every day of their lives with an empty cup. You know, if we have a full cup all the time, we can't add anything to it. But if our cup is always empty, we can always be learning something. And every person that you come in contact with throughout your day, you know, every step you take, you have the opportunity to learn something if you look upon the world with the right set of eyes.
Yeah, I love that. And I totally resonate with that. And I think that way of fostering a sense of curiosity and creativity, that's how we learn when we come to the world with that mindset of what can I learn from this, and also being open to the fact that there's not a clear answer and we might have to be, you know, more creative or adaptable in actively finding an answer rather than just expecting the answer to be there or for us to be able to just ask someone and it be a straight and clear thing.
So I'll share a funny story, and I don't know if you've ever read any of my father's books. So my father's teacher, my father always called it imminent departure. So basically, the way it worked was, if my father, you know, ever got lazy and kind of, you know, dropped into the lazy style of learning. So for instance, one day when my father was about 10 or 12 years old, he was sitting around the camp with his mentor, Stalking Wolf, and my father kept hearing this bird off in the distance. And he's sitting there and he's listening to the bird, and he says, you know, grandfather, and that was, you know, a term of respect to your elder. He said, grandfather, do you hear that bird down there in the swamp? And grandfather shakes his head yes, and he goes, my father goes, oh, you know, what type of bird is that? You know, and Stalking Wolf goes, what you're telling me, grandson, is you're too lazy to go find out for yourself. I go now back to my people. And he packed up his stuff and he left. And he disappeared for about 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
To kind of teach my father a lesson about, you know, being an active participant in his own learning, as opposed to, you know, just always, you know, not knowing something and asking the question. And the bird, by the way, was an escaped parakeet.
That's great. I love that story. That's fantastic. And such a good lesson, because it's so easy for myself, and I notice, you know, other people to slip into that lazy style of learning where we just expect an answer straight away, yeah, or we expect something to be clear cut rather than having to dive a bit deeper and really adopt a curious mindset.
Yeah. And I think the internet, for better or worse, has, you know, exacerbated that problem, you know, because we, you know, now, you know, most of us carry these devices in our pocket that, you know, literally have access to the length and breadth of, you know, human knowledge. And, you know, most people just spend their times on those devices arguing with each other. you know, as opposed to, you know, potentially using it as a learning tool. But that, you know, the problem with all that information out there is, you know, a good portion of it is probably crap or false.
Yeah.
So yeah, once again, you have to be, you know, a critical thinker and you know, apply what you learn from every source you learn it from to, you know, prove it right or prove it wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of critical thinking and that mindset would play a lot into tracking and the ability to read the environment and the ability to kind of be open to the possibilities within an environment and what's happening within an environment. So could you speak a little bit about tracking, why you think it's important to be able to read an environment, and how perhaps like someone could get started with that skill if they're new to it?
Absolutely. So yeah, so tracking, the one thing I absolutely love about tracking, and you know, it's close brother or sister awareness, tracking is the one skill that you can always be doing. You know, when people hear the term tracking, they think it applies to just following animal tracks. And yes, that's a huge part of it. But no, tracking is something that you can do, you know, no matter where you are. And before I touch on animal tracking, I'll explain what I mean. You know, so for instance, when I was a kid, you know, when I would go somewhere with my father, you know, we'd go into a store to buy something, and we'd come out of a store and he would immediately start asking me questions. You know, how many men were in that store? You know, how many women? How many people had hats on? You know, how many people were left-handed? You know, just ask me question after question. Or we'd walk by a vehicle that was parked and he would say, look in that vehicle, you know, what do you think that person does for a job? How clean are they? How messy are they? How many people do you think drive that car on a regular basis? You know, in a pro tip, if you want to know that, you look at the dusty fingerprints on the rearview mirror, see how many different sets of fingerprints. You know, if the mirror is constantly being adjusted, chances are there's multiple drivers.
Yeah.
And it's really just asking those questions. As far as, you know, tracking animals, it's also one of my favorite things to do, because you're following this invisible thread that was left behind by this being, you know, whether it's a, you know, a fox or a deer or an elk or a coyote, you know, that is far more aware than you, that is, you know, living the way it's supposed to be living, and there's some, you know, incredible magic in that. And as far as, you know, giving advice on for people on how to get into tracking, a really good book I'll recommend as a good kind of starting place is called the Peterson's Field Guide to Animal Tracks. And it's, you know, Peterson Field Guides are a really popular series of field guides here in the US. You know, they have everything from edible plants to animal tracks to insects. And it's a good starting place. And, you know, tracking is all about, you know, pattern recognition. And once you start to kind of burn these patterns into your brain, the way these different, you know, families of animals' tracks are, then you're going to be able to see them much more clearly. You know, so for instance, if I see a track on the ground and it's round in shape, and there's, you know, four toe pads, and I don't see claws in the ground, that's pretty safe to assume that's a member of the cat family. You know, if I see a track that's oval in shape and has four toes and I can see the claws, that's a good indication that that's a member of the canine family. So it's really about, developing, you know, the pattern recognition, for these, you know, specific families of animals, and then really taking that and running with it. There's also a really good book out there. There's a guy named Mark Elbrock. He wrote, I can't think of the title of it right now, but it's Animal Tracks and Sign. It's really, really big book with a lot of color photos. That's just got a ton of good information. And as far as where you're at in Australia, I'm not sure if there is any, Australia-specific animal tracking guides. I have some friends that have an outdoor school in Australia, and I can, reach out to them and try to get some info that I can pass on to you later on.
Yeah, that would be cool. Who are they?
My friends Sam and Kate.
I know them.
Yeah, Kate was a caretaker at tracker school when I was there as an instructor, and you know, Sam came through as a student, and yeah, I love those guys. And actually, my father was out there, I think it was last year or the year before. He actually taught a class at there.
Yeah, my friend went to place. Yeah, my friend went to your father's course or his class.
I almost went on that trip, but I had other classes scheduled during that time. The main thing with tracking is just to, you know, get out in nature and just, you know, if you see a track, you don't know what it is, you know, always carry a notebook with you and draw it. You know, it's something with human beings and writing things down and drawing them helps us to better kind of, you know, burn those images and those patterns into our brain. And then we can take that information home and research it through a number of various sources. Another great way is just to go into nature and just sit quietly and, you know, watch nature unfold around you. Most modern humans, when we go into the woods, we are alien invaders that, you know, create this huge disturbance, that ripples across the landscape, and most animals are going to hide or flee. But when you just do something as simple as go out and sit down, nature will pretty quickly resume its normal, you know, how it's normally operating, and you'll get to see animals come by you, and then you can go look at their tracks if they walk through a soft enough ground. It's one of those things you can always be working on. You know, whenever I'm out and about, whether it's in the woods or in town, you know, I'm constantly just always trying to be aware of what's going on around me. And as I said, tracking and awareness are so incredibly linked. You can't separate one from the other.
Yeah, totally. I love that. And I love that idea of, yeah, always kind of being in that mindset of being aware and being able to read an environment and being able to pick up on patterns. Doesn't matter if you're in an urban environment or you're in a natural environment, you can always track.
Definitely. Absolutely. And it's, once again, it's one of those skills that was universal, no matter where your ancestors came from. People were tracking because they had to know, what animals were around, whether that was animals they were pursuing for food or, animals that maybe hunting them.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. So I'll start to wrap things up. One question that I wanted to finish with is what's one thing that people can do today to get more connected with nature?
That is a good question. I think the most important thing is, and this is another a problem that plagues the Western world, is that we'll call us an apex species, we automatically put hierarchies on things. Like a human life is more valuable than a cow's life, and a cow's life is more valuable than a fox's life, and a fox's life is more valuable than a tree's life. And really, we need to stop thinking about it this way. Every single being that's out there is alive. There is life in it, and we need to learn to respect and honor all life that is around us. So that's a good first step. The next step, I would say would be to just, spend as much time in nature as you possibly can. And, think about, what parts of it resonate with you most, and then pursue those, back to primitive living skills. When people come for a week-long class with me, I may teach them, let's say a dozen different skills, that are, shelter, water, fire, and food-based. And people leave a class and they're often really overwhelmed because they have this notebook full of information and all these different skills, and it can be pretty daunting. But what I tell people is, pick the one skill that you are most stoked about and start with that one and immerse yourself in that one. And then within time and with some dedication and passion on your part, it will lead you to all of the other skills. They're all interconnected. I think it starts with really just, as I said, getting yourself out in nature, separating yourself out from the man-made world a little bit, taking a step back and, really trying to analyze your place in the world, where you're at, and how you fit into the natural world. And I think if more people did that, we would be much better off. I always laugh when people say, we need to save the earth. The earth is going to be just fine. At places like Chernobyl or things like that, the horrible nuclear meltdown, 30 years ago, and now that place has pretty much nearly been swallowed up by the natural world, and the animal populations there are, back to flourishing. And even though there's certain areas where there's, high levels of radiation, there are still animal populations that are thriving. And, the earth isn't going anywhere. The earth is, was born of, fire and, astral bodies colliding, and, we're essentially a flea on the back, and if anything, it's going to be us that's going to get kicked off. And I think just as I said, spending time in nature, finding a nature-based skill that you're passionate about or you have some interest in, and pursue that. You don't necessarily have to go take a class. As I said, we have the internet, we have things like YouTube, that can start us down that path. Although, you know, I will say this is there's really no substitute for any skill, whether it's, you know, auto mechanics or flintknapping, to actually taking like a physical class with somebody who knows what they're doing. But the internet is a really valuable resource. And, you know, I also encourage people when using the internet or using books, you know, don't just trust any one source or any one thing. You know, find as many different viewpoints as you can on that one thing, and then build your knowledge base off that. You know, don't just rely on one thing. Yeah. But yeah, just simply getting outside, getting comfortable with nature. You know, a lot of people in the Western world are terrified of nature. You know, they think they're going to go out and get eaten by something, or, you know, and nothing, you know, could be further from the truth. I mean, yeah, sure. Of course, occasionally things in nature do eat people. but, you know, it's nature is not a scary thing. It is a thing to be honored and protected. You know, we only have one planet. You know, I always think back to the, you know, that Carl Sagan speech, that the pale blue dot, you know, it's, we're all born of the earth. We all return to the earth. It's our only home. And, you know, we're treating it like crap. And, you know, once we become more familiar with the earth and the wondrous creatures that we share the space with, you know, we're going to be that much better human beings, and, you know, pass that on to our children and grandchildren. Because right now we make such short-sighted decisions without thinking of the future. You know, my father's teacher said, we are a society of people that kills our grandchildren to feed our children. and, you know, it's the truth. It's sad, but true.
Yeah.
You know, the human lifespan is so infinitesimal compared to, you know, Earth time. So yeah, I think we need to start, you know, as a global society, making decisions based on what things are going to look like 10, 20, 30, 50, 100, 500 years from now versus, you know, tomorrow or the next day or next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with all that. I think we need to start looking long term, and I really liked the bit you said about how we when we spend time in nature, we start to see how we are a part of nature and how we are kind of designed to interact with it. And the more we develop that relationship with nature, the better we will treat the natural world.
And it also, you know, spending time in nature, we're also without all of the distractions that we constantly occupy our time with. You know, if you're going to go out in nature, you know, leave your phone behind. You know, don't worry about the bills that you got to pay. You know, just go out into nature with an empty cup and without distraction. And I think so many people nowadays are not capable of just sitting quietly by themselves for even a few minutes without picking up their phone or getting on their computer or putting on a show. And, you know, going out into nature can really, really help with that, and, you know, help us to really self-analyze who we are as people and what path we're on.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Thank you so much for sharing all that today, Tom. How can people connect with you and find out more about what you're doing?
Cool. So a couple ways you can do that, through the Trackers Earth website. So, you know, right now, because of the pandemic, we're still kind of operating in, you know, quote unquote webinar mode. So 2 days a week, 2 or 3 days a week, I run adult webinars, from everything on the principles of wilderness survival to wild edible plants to, I think this week coming up, I'm doing one on awareness. Those are typically Thursdays and Fridays, 4 to 6 PM Pacific Standard Time. You can also find a lot of my content on the Anchored Outdoors website. That's www.anchoredoutdoors.com. And then very soon, I'm actually going to have my own website. So one of my many, many passions in life is photography. So I'm kind of launching a website that's going to be tombrown3.com. That's going to, you know, have a blog component and feature some of my photography. As far as social media goes, you know, I'm on Facebook, but I don't use it too much. But my main social media is Instagram, and my Instagram name is Tom_Brown3. And that's something I update regularly, you know, because I do like to take a lot of photos. So yeah, and as I said, you know, anybody who's listening to this has any questions, you know, feel free to reach out to me through one of those avenues, and I'm more than happy to give you guidance. If you're in some random part of the United States or anywhere in the world and, you know, want to find an organization that teaches these skills, I have connections all over the place, and I know of schools all over the world that are teaching this stuff. And I'm, like I said, my goal is to connect as many people as possible back to nature. So I'm happy to help in any way I can.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tom. Really awesome. Appreciate your time today and sharing all that. Yeah,
excellent, no worries. Brother.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. So as I mentioned during the show, all the links to connect with Tom are going to be in the show notes. I'd really love to hear your guys' thoughts on this episode. So maybe take a screenshot and share it on Instagram or whatever social media platform you use and tag myself and Tom. We'd love to hear what you thought of the episode. What were some of the key takeaways and insights that you got? I really loved it, and I know you guys probably did as well. So we'd love to see you share that. And if you haven't already, please leave us a rating and review over on iTunes or whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts on. It really helps with getting the message that I'm trying to spread out to more people. So if you could do that, that would be a massive service. So again, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Really appreciate your listenership. If you want to connect with me, then all the links to do so are also in the show notes, so head down there and check that out. But until the next episode, keep getting outside, keep living, you know, all these practices and principles that we talked about in this episode and throughout many of the episodes of Move Wild Podcast. Really appreciate you guys listening in. Thanks so much.